One of the things I just got to tell you before we start is that it is at Cafe Connection that we're interviewing Ruth, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're actually going to be talking about Ruth's life, particularly after she was widowed, and then how God has actually used her working with children in Romania and Home of Hope and so on. So it's going to be really quite an interesting story. Well, I know it's an interesting story, and we'll see how the interview goes. But if you've got friends who might be interested in that, that's the thing that we really wanted to just point up, really. Okay, let's just pray, because I am really quite excited about this. I am doing the most boring bit, if you like, but actually I am really excited about it, because in fact I've got excited during the worship time because of it today, and there's some bits that are buzzing on that it's all sort of joining up for me. So let's pray that I calm down a little bit, really, and manage to communicate it properly to you. Okay, Lord, we just want to thank you that you do give us life. And Lord, we're looking to you. We want to put our own agendas away and listen to what you're speaking to us. And we really ask you to speak into our hearts this morning. Amen.
Amen.
Right. This is the third session of something called Mission Essentials. And we're looking at participating in the Missio Dei. I think that's how you pronounce that last word. I've been pronouncing it wrong up until about half an hour ago, and then Dave's put me right. But I think it's day. I'm just going to say Missio Dei, and we'll go from there. Which basically it means the purpose of God. It's joining in God's purposes, and it's actually the sending of God, or the mission of God. Okay, so that's what it. This. I told you about that, dear. It's gone. It's gone off twice in the meeting, and I said I'd put it on snooze. Dave, you might have to tell her how to put it off snooze. Can't believe that. Just wait until she's sorted out. Okay. Now, this sounds perfectly okay, but it gets harder. Okay. So, this stuff that we're talking about this morning, this mission that God has, is not an activity of the church. It's actually an activity of God. I've got the notes here, so let's just... Oh, great. How do we do that? I'm pressing buttons, but it ain't working. Never mind. And I'm carefully phrasing... Okay, yeah, there we go. So that's... I've already said that. Click once more, Dave. Then the church is actually just a tool or an instrument in this whole mission, this whole thing that God has of sending. Okay? We're just a tool in it. And so I've got a question about this. Let's just... Is that down?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, my question is this. Okay? What do you think about that basic concept? It's the church existing because of God's mission instead of the church having a mission. Okay? It's a bit different. Okay, so what do you think about that sort of thing? What thoughts do you have where the focus changes in this way? So just turn to the people next to you, maybe in twos or threes, and just begin to just have a look. What are your initial thoughts about that? Any thoughts you like, anything, its effects, what it makes you think, what difference does it make, and so on. Okay, I'll give you a couple of minutes. Just what do you think about the fact that this changes like this? Okay, does anybody have anything that they think we ought to put up on the board as to what it really, what a major thought is? Have you got have major thoughts or just minor ones? What anybody share what your thoughts were? Greg?
The authority of the mission is different. Where it comes from.
Okay. Anybody else? Anything else? Gillian first. Yeah.
It has put God back in the picture.
Yeah.
He goes with us.
Okay. He goes with us. Okay. Okay.
He chose.
Oh, sorry. Somebody was saying.
I said. I would have said it's more weekend with him.
All right. Okay. Yes. That's okay. We. It's a debatable point, and we'll.
Church is God's idea, not God is the church's idea. And he chose to use the church.
Yeah. Okay, anything else?
It fits with that, seeing what God's doing and ask for me.
Okay, yeah.
I also wonder if it had something to do with what happened in the beginning. God tried to use Abraham, then he used Israel. And then Jesus, there were the prophets, then Jesus came. And it's like the church is a living representation of God on earth. So. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah. Luke?
Oh, it doesn't really much fit God's mission using the church or the church's mission itself, because the end goal would be the same either way.
Okay. Doesn't matter. Okay.
I think it implies that if you're not participating in the mission, then you're not really part.
Okay, you're in it.
You should therefore define yourself as being part of the mission, not part of the church.
Okay. Okay, we'll stop there for a minute. Okay, that's a good thought. Okay, got one other question, so that's why I wanted just to... How does this change the way that you think about church? Okay, because it does. We're getting out.
I disagree, that doesn't necessarily follow. It doesn't have to change the way you think.
Okay, well, if you're already thinking that way, that's fine, yeah, okay, fair enough. So, how might this change the way that you think about church, is my question, so, okay. Do you want to have a little chat about that? Just have a little chat about that. How might it change the way you think about church? How does it change things in actually what we do as church? Just twos and threes again, same people probably, best. Don't get up. Okay. A lot of conversations about that as well as you got going. It took a little while, didn't it, to get your brains into gear, but you can see that you're starting to accelerate in that. Is there anything that's really hit anyone particularly? You've suddenly been talking about this, or you've thought about this for a while perhaps, I mean obviously Ian has, that what's actually might change the way you think about it? Anyone, what did you say?
It's definitely less comfortable.
Right, okay. So it's less comfy. How'd you sell comfy? That's why, yeah, thank you. I'm not quite sure why it'd be less comfy, but we'll see. Rolf?
We thought we answered this sort of in the previous one as well. It was more, we thought it was more encompassing of all sorts of people, situations, I guess just looking at the past.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, thank you. Was it Sue, did you?
Yeah, it's something that Philippa said on the other page.
Yeah.
Sort of made me think that if you weren't in mission, then you weren't in.
Mm.
If I thought that would frighten me. It would be, you know, I would be an outsider then.
Mm.
It then set the criteria. You can't, you know, come in unless you're...
Right, so...
I found that you have to be careful of that, though. It does depend on what the mission is. Because, I mean, part of God's mission is to go and make disciples. That doesn't necessarily mean to evangelise. It might mean to teach those that are there, to bring on them, that also just equally a part of the mission. So it depends on what the mission is.
Yeah, and we will come on to that in a minute. So we'll try and something about that. So that's fine. I'm sure what I should note about that. So,
could be brainy.
Unsure at this stage. Yeah, is that reasonable? Yeah, Carol, and then Heidi.
If it's God's at the centre,
we'll ignore it. Ignore it now. Ignore it. This is what we do at home. Carol. Carol.
My preferences are not important. Yeah, my preferences are not important.
Personal preferences
or less important.
Less important. Okay, yeah.
That's why it's less comfortable.
Okay, right. So, okay, thank you, Wendy. Heidi.
Because God's at the center.
Yes.
To look at the global picture.
Yeah.
And the big old.
Yeah. So we look more globally, yeah?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I think that's how you spell it. I'm not sure. Thank you. Greg?
I'm trying to get the phraseology right, but who decides and agrees what God's mission is?
Yeah.
The people in the church can all back that, align to it. And maybe this is something to do with there being different expressions of church in different places, that you effectively gravitate towards the church that you fundamentally think aligns with what they see as the most important part of what God's mission is. God's mission is huge. There's lots of what we said here.
Yeah.
Right? But if you think that bringing people to faith is most important, and that's most happening in Africa, say, then you'd be part of a church which was putting all its resources into spreading the word in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Not part of a church which was more socially active towards helping people in difficult circumstances, for example.
Mm.
So who decides the mission?
Okay.
How do you all agree as a church?
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that in a moment, yeah. Who decides? Agree. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to stop there because otherwise I will run out of time. I just want to zoom on to one other thing. This is a piece of information here about this sending business, which just puts the context for us with the church. Is it goes... And the Father and the Son send the Spirit. And in fact, there's two verses. I think, it's John 14:26 and John 16:7. One place Jesus says, the Father is going to send the Spirit to you. And then the next place it says, I will send the Spirit to you. And so Jesus and the Father are sending the Spirit. And then you get... in John 17, you get the Father, the Son, and the Spirit actually sending the church. Okay, so you've got this... the reason I put that in there is because there's this sense that God has got this whole concept of journey and sending and pushing out and wanting to go. And it's in his heart. And so it's in his heart as the Father. And it has to go to the Son. And the Son gets a hold of it. And the Son goes, yeah, that's right. And then the Spirit, we've got to send the Spirit. So the Spirit goes. And then they go, oh, yeah. And then we've got all these people. And, whoa, the church has been sent too. Because it's all part of the lifeblood coming out of the Father's heart. Do you see what I mean? So that's the sort of sense that I had about that. Now, we have an issue in church about mission versus missions. And when I first looked at this, I thought to myself, I'm not sure that Dayspring's really got a problem with this. I spent quite a bit of time in a Baptist church, and they had the Baptist Missionary Society, and they'd send missionaries abroad and stuff like that and do that sort of thing. And I didn't think Dayspring really had that. But I began to sort of unpack it a little bit. So I wanted to just look at this, because I think it is an issue, but it's possibly hidden for us as a sort of a charismatic evangelical church here in Wiltshire. So God has a church for his mission, and this flows from his character and purposes of missionary God. Just said that with the other bits. And then the mission is to put things right and to get things to be as he intended. So that means that if we put it in religious language, it would be, it is, his mission is to be redemptive, to redeem and restore a broken, sinful world. Okay? And he is the primary of activity, and I think this is where it gets difficult for us, particularly as charismatics, is the primary activity of God is in the world, not in the church. Okay? Now, I think that's difficult for us. There's a song we sang this morning. Okay? I'd rather spend, 1 day in your house than 10,000 anywhere else. Okay? Or I'd rather spend a day in your courts rather than anywhere else. So I began to think about how I would put this mission grid over that song, and this is what I did. I thought to myself, the earth is God's footstool. Footstools normally go in a house. So it's a tiny bit of his overall house. His courts. The courtyards are not the house, but they're the extended bit around it. I could see that it's in the courts. If you like, my life, my work, you know, you'd work in a courtyard, don't you? Have gated, in lots of communities, you have a gated courtyard because it's secure and stuff. And you work in the courtyard, you actually do work there. So where we work. So I started to put this mission grid over that song. Because otherwise, we put a different grid over it, which says, when I am here on a Sunday morning in a room with a whole load of other Christians, this is where I'd rather be. And in actual fact, I'd rather not. Not that I don't like you. I love being with the church. But actually, I want to be with God and what God is doing. And so this is where this sending God business begins to hit us a little bit hard. Okay, so I wanted to flag that up because I'm sure you'll feel it. Because I did as I was sort of preparing it. Okay, so the primary activity of God is in the world, not in the church. That's not to say that God isn't active in the church. That's not what we're saying. Cool, of course, but the primary area. So, now, the teen boys have been doing something about this effect here. So we've got this. The church is the missionary. Okay? So you have to start to think, what does a missionary do? Now, Dave Sandberg's going to come on to this, what missionaries do, a little bit. He's going to talk some hopefully gory stories, guys, but I don't know whether they are. I don't know if he's backed off from that or not. But there might be some gory stuff. So, the church is the missionary. And then, what the guys have been looking at a little bit is something here. Now, we've been talking about humility recently, and we tried to work out what the use of humility was. And you'll have to talk about that later because we haven't got time now. But therefore, if the church is the mission, we have to act as a team or one body. And I've put a note to you team boys. This is where we need humility. So we work together as a team. Because we worked out that what is the use of being humble? Okay, actually, people like working with humble people. They don't like working with arrogant, proud, cocky, self-satisfying people. It really drives you up the wall. But if you're working with humble people, the team works like a well-oiled machine. So humility is really important. So that's where the context is. Because the whole church is going to have to operate as a team in the mission. Okay. Now, I've got to move on. Sorry. The next thing is this. The mission has to be the organising principle of the church. If the mission is driving, if we're actually a church, you know, not with a mission, but the mission has got the church and the mission's got Dayspring, then the mission has to be the organising principle. So it goes way beyond being an optional activity or programme. It is the organising axis of the church and the life of the church revolves around it. So it's not saying that we don't do corporate worship or we develop community or we make disciples. They are started by and organised around the mission. So adding events and days, just adding a few events and days on, doing a few missions here and there, a little tent thing there, a little bit here, doesn't really cut it. Okay, I've got that on here, but we're going to zoom through that, sorry, if we can zoom with. Okay, I want to just move on to the next bit, which there is no other function of church that is the organising principle. Okay, none other. So, not worship, That's not our organising principle. It's not community or even discipleship and evangelism. That is not the organising principle. We do not organise ourselves by any of those things. We organise ourselves by what is our overall mission, that is the mission of God, okay, in the sending thing. So I know we've got to work it out. We've talked about that. We've got to work things out. But here's the thing. I think the question should not be, the question isn't, should I do mission? All right? I don't know if I've phrased this quite right, but is, how can I help in this mission? Or, what is my role in this mission? So some of you are talking, like Ian was talking earlier, and he was sort of saying, well, it depends what you're going to do, and you've got to teach, and you've got to disciple make, and stuff like that, and there's different people. God. So, but it's an attitude thing in us. It's not a case of, what am I good at? I'll do that. But I know I'm good at these things, but here's the team. What can I bring to the team? Or how? What does it not just... No, sorry, that's not quite right. It's, what does the team need at this point? And you just come to the team and say, where do you want me? And then let the team decide. So if you're really good at teaching, but we've got 10 other teachers in the team, you may need to do something else and have to learn a new skill. Or you may be used a lot less regularly in teaching and have to do something else, because you're going to be part of a team. And this is where the humility bit cuts in with us. Okay? So we don't look to the church as our starting point, but God's activity in our local setting. So it needs to be discerned. And then, of course, Carol got it brilliantly right at the start, which is, we should be finding out what God is doing and joining the thing. Dave, yeah. Now, I think at this point, you, if you followed me, you'll probably think there's a bit of a disconnect, and I think there might be in a way, or not a complete disconnect. But suddenly I've started to say, so that one on the top right, so we don't look to the church as our starting point, but God's activity in our local setting. So this is part of deciding, Greg, like, you know, what the mission is, how do we decide, and we're discerning what, you know, God's activity is in our local setting. But of course it goes wider than that, because you work in all sorts of different places, we all do, and so, you know, it's going wider as you are just out in the community, and you are sent out there, and you're being out there, so... That's what it is. The reason we put this up is because we've made an adjustment. It's okay, don't just leave it there, David. Sorry. We've made a slight adjustment to the banner. I don't know if anybody can notice. You all would be able to see it sitting down. The date, there's no date. The Dayspring Focus of 2012, which we kept all the way through 2013, we decided that when it got 2 years out of date, we ought to change. But actually, there's a slight serious bit to it, is that we don't think that this bit here and the joining in is actually lost yet. On our season is still for finding out what God is doing and joining in. It's really important for Dayspring that we continue to do that. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to discern what's going on. Now, Greg's point about trying to work it out is absolutely on the button, isn't it? I mean, we are trying to work it out. Now, we're bound to make a few mistakes, but we are trying as a whole team to do it. Okay? So I think that's where I want to leave it. I've got some other stuff that I think is... Well, we'll just have to leave for the moment, but I might come back to that. Dave?
Yeah.
Do you want to move that now? Because it's going to be in the way of your thing. Because it's going to be in the way of the... I'll just move
it. Is.
Are you using the clipboard?
No, I'm not, no.
Sorry,
Ray. Oh, that's good.
Is that good timing?
Well, I thought it was, but the clock's completely wrong. So. Which is fine. So that's great. In the late 50s, my mum was at university. She became a Christian. She decided to follow Jesus. And at the same around while at university, she heard about the work of Wycliffe with the Indians of the Amazon jungle, and that really drew her. And so she started to find out some more about it and to look into it. And through that, she heard about a tribe of Amazon Indians called the Sinktalaga, and she really felt that God was calling her to be a missionary to that tribe of Indians. And at that time with Wycliffe, you needed to have a profession. She'd done a maths degree. The quickest way to get a profession was to become a maths teacher. Ideally, I think she'd have loved to have been an engineer, but her goal now was to be out there showing the love of Jesus to those Indians, working with them. And so she became a maths teacher. And then she met my dad, she married him. He also felt called to the Sinktalaga, and so in 1969 they actually arrived in Brazil as missionaries with Wycliffe. At about that time, the Brazilian agency that looked after the Indians of the Amazon jungle made contact with the tribe of Indians, and they believed that these Indians were the Sinktalaga. And Wycliffe, in its wisdom, actually assigned another couple to be the missionaries to this tribe of Indians. And so my parents were there, hang on a minute, we thought we were called to the Sinktalaga. What's going on, Lord? What's happening? And within weeks, it turned out that this tribe of Indians that they thought were the Sinktalaga were actually a different tribe of Indians. Things were confusing those days, I guess. And they made contact with the proper tribe of Indians that were the Sinktalaga. And my parents became the missionaries to those Indians and started working with them. We then go forward to 1977. God really stepped in and transformed the situation with the work. They've been working with the Indians for 6-7 years. And there was, in early 77, there was a big language workshop that Wycliffe were running. All the missionaries brought out their Indian workers in the surrounding area. And they had experts on linguistics who were working with the missionaries and the Indians and looking to move the work on, which primarily was to translate the Bible into the Indians' own language. And because of what the Brazilian government wanted at that time and the length of the workshop, my parents had to bring out 3 different Indians sequentially to cover the time the workshop was going on. And 2 of those Indians, while they were out, were converted by another Indian tribe and went back having a faith in Jesus. My parents knew nothing about it. We knew nothing about it. We arrived back in the village, the Indian village. We were wandering around on the first morning that we were there, and we noticed that our old house where we used to live, they'd knocked down the internal walls, they put up bench seating, and when we said, oh, has somebody started a school, they said, oh no, that's our church. And the Indians had all come to Christ. They were meeting regularly to worship God. We saw real transformation in the lives of those Indians, and it was just absolutely fantastic. And here is, if this will work, a picture there was taken on Christmas Day 1977. That is the Indians meeting to celebrate Christmas for the first time. In the framework is their new church that they were mid-building. And that picture for me and for my parents is a really special picture. It's what they were there to do and what they were looking to do. In 5 days after that picture was taken, we left the Indian village for the last time. The Brazilian government had decided they no longer wanted foreign nationals working with the Indians, and so they banned missionaries going into the Indian villages, and it was another 10 years before they changed that decision. By May 78, we'd flown back to the UK. By June, July 78, my parents felt that it was right to settle back in the UK. My dad became a civil engineer, went back to civil engineering. And by April 79, we'd moved into a village on the outskirts of Maidstone. And my parents have lived there ever since. And I've never been back to Brazil either. I think if my parents were stood, well, it wouldn't surprise me if my parents stood here, that they could honestly say to you that they have prayed for the Sinktalaga Indians every day since they left that Indian village. It wouldn't surprise me. They are amazing prayer warriors. And for much of the time, there wasn't a lot of encouraging news. People would often, when they were talking about their time in Brazil, say, oh, well, you're only there for 10 years. What happened there? And they say, well, we saw them become Christians. We saw them come to faith. We'll leave it to God. We came back from holiday mid-80s. on the mat waiting for us was a letter from Brazil. It was from some missionary friends, and they said, "Have you heard the news about BCV?" Now, BCV was one of the Indians. He was like a man of peace to my parents in the Indian village. He was the Indian who we made friends with. He's the one on the right there. The cute one in the middle with the book is me. And he was a great guy. He helped them with the language. He was a real friend. He was one of the three that came out to that language conference in 77, and he actually didn't become a Christian. So he wasn't the two that were initially converted, but he did say to my parents, "I was out in the jungle and I prayed, and I believe in Jesus, and he's come into my heart now." And at a language workshop in 73, and guys, BCV was mid-teens at this time, so he's not much older than you lot, they decided as a bit of light relief that they'd have a little archery competition between the different Indians, and BCV was out as this. And so each of the Indians had their own bows and arrows with them. Those are a couple of Cincta Laga with their bows and arrows, so you can see the bows are sort of 6 foot six long. The arrows are getting on for 6 foot, so they're real big things. And for the competition, that building on the left, they, at the far end of it, they set up a, what was really a pawpaw, so a thing that was about the size of a large melon. And then the Indians all stood down at this near end and took their bows and arrows or blowtorches or whatever they used. And BCV stood up. He's only in his mid-teens, so he's not much older than you guys. And he put his first arrow through the middle of the pawpaw. And just to prove it wasn't a fluke, he put the second arrow through the middle of the first. So he was that good a shot at that time. And he won. So you can see there's some real stories, and we had a real love for him. Sadly, in this letter, we were told that he died in a motor accident. And in the newspaper clipping that was included with it, they seem to be indicating that there was alcohol involved in the reason for the accident. And so there were ups and downs that my parents would have had during that time. If we fast forward to 30 years after we left, or around about 30 years after we left that Indian village, parents received an email from a Wycliffe worker. He'd been invited back onto the Cincta Laga reservation. And as he was being shown around the village, the Indian that was shown around said, "Oh, and here's our church." And it turned out that Indian was the pastor of the church. He was a Cincta Laga Indian. Over the 2 years prior to that, that God had been speaking to the Cincta Laga Indians through dreams, that he'd brought them or excited them and put them on fire again. They were meeting every day in that church, except for Mondays. And on Monday nights, they were going up a hill nearby to pray for the surrounding area and to pray for the Indians that were still living in the jungle that they could see and over. And they pray all night. And so my parents had seen God come through. It was God's mission. They did what they felt was right. My mum heard about it. She was drawn to it. So she, in effect, sort of discovered what was going on. She discerned, because she felt called to the Cincta Laga, that God was calling her there. And then she did what she had to. So she became a maths teacher. They went out to Brazil. And then, obviously, when the Brazilian government stopped them working with the Indians, they reassessed, worked out where they were, and they discerned that they should come back to the UK. And they just carried on doing what they could, which was praying. And not all the missionaries settled back in their countries when the Brazilians kicked them out. Some stayed in Brazil, and 10 years later they got back into the Indian tribes, and they've seen those tribes be converted and come to Christ. Others went, one particular missionary couple, as they were being pushed out by the Brazilians actually came back to them and said, "Actually, we'd like you to go back in. We've got settlers moving in near the Indian village. We'd like you to be a liaison between the Indians and the settlers, so that there isn't any conflict." And so they were able to carry on the work of God while having this official role for the Brazilian government as well. And so God moves in different ways. It's his mission. He decides, he moves in it. And it really is, it's up to us to discern where it's at and where it is. Last couple of last couple of months, I've been in some church leader meetings with church leaders. In one of them, one church leader talked about how he felt God was prompting him to talk to his church about hell. It wasn't something he was keen to talk to them about. I think it may have taken him 12 months to get to a point where he felt ready to do it. But when he did, he said he was amazed. At the end, six people came forward and gave their lives to Christ. And it'll be interesting to see where they are in 12 months' time. But within the meeting, the guys I was with were all excited. They thought, yeah, we should be telling more people about hell and doing all of this and doing that. And then just recently this week, I was in another meeting with church leaders, and somebody a bit provocatively said, I think there's coming a point where we're going to have to tell people about sin in the world. And he was talking globally. You know, if you look at Syria, you can see there's obviously sin in the world. And of course that degenerated into discussion about, you know, yeah, we need to point out personal sin and all of that kind of stuff. And then someone said, well, actually, I was with somebody who was struggling with alcohol addiction last week, and I just felt God prompt me to say, do you want to give your life to Jesus? And so I asked him, and he said, yes, I need Jesus, I've got nothing else. And I was able to, and he went on to say how he took him through and talked to him, and he saw the guy come to Jesus. And again, it'll be interesting where that person is in 12 months' time, because it is about making disciples. But to me, the thing isn't what people said, the thing is the fact that they were open to the promptings of the Spirit. And they did what God told him. If we truly believe that this is God's mission, and that we as a church and his people are an instrument or a tool within that mission, then as we're out and about on our front lines, so as we're at school, and as we're at work, and as we're with friends and family and neighbours, and so as we're out on our front lines, we need to be open to those promptings of the Spirit. And it may be that it's just a smile and a kind word. Maybe that we've got to stop and have a coffee or a beer with somebody and ask them how their life's going. Maybe that we've got to invite them to cafe or cabaret. And I really pray that increasingly it'll be that we've actually got to say to them, would you like to give your life to Jesus? And we can engineer the conversation so that we do that every time. But if we get two steps ahead of where God is at with his mission, then often we do more harm than good, and we rarely see people responding the way we'd love to see them respond. When we're talking to people from outside the church who are visiting about Open Blue, often if Wendy's in the conversation, she'll say, Dave always wanted to have a bus. Mm-hmm. And guys, there was a point when there was a youth group much like yours when Dave actually said, if each one of that youth group bring somebody along to the youth group who stays and carries on coming to it, so if the youth group doubles in size, he would buy a youth bus for the youth group. They never quite managed it. But for whatever reason, in 2002, Dave always had a dream to see a bus. 2002, we as a church felt that it was the time to go forward with bus, that God was saying, now is the time, we need that. And wherever the bus has been its most successful, it's been when we've been listening to what God is doing, we've been listening to the community. So Sally Wheeler heard about the bus. She said, oh, I know just the place where it could operate, and we now operate in Laycock because of that. The educational support people invited us into Thingley. And initially, because of what they recommended, we only went every other week. And the community said, hang on a minute, that's a bit unfair. You go every week everywhere else. And so we now go every week. Dawn Parkin said, I know just an estate where I need the bus at Hallavington, and we're there now, and we've seen amazing things happen there. Who knows what's going to happen with the way the housing associations are inviting us into their estates. And it's interesting with Green Square that initially all we were doing was providing a facility which they could operate out of and they could do their thing, and now they're actually saying, hang on a minute, this one-point cookery course, that sounds fantastic. Come and do it for our estates. You know, who knows what God is going to do with that and how he's going to transform it. This stuff, as you can probably tell, really gets me where it's at. Growing up in Brazil as I did, the people, all the Christians I knew were all Wycliffe missionaries. For every person who was working with an Indian tribe, there was another person who was part of the support staff. So we had pilots, we had radio operators, we had teachers, we had doctors, nurses, we had admin staff, we had builders, carpenters, mechanics and people. And all of them were there because they believed God had called them to be there. And they were all working to further the mission and to reach the Indians and do that. And if we truly believe as a church that God has a mission out there, then we need to all be getting behind it. It's not that these things happen on the periphery, that they all happen there. And I have to say, when I came back at the age of 8 to the UK, and I used to describe it as being life wasn't as real, wasn't as raw, certainly wasn't as risky. I'm probably going to run out of time, but remind me and I can tell you about a couple of anaconda if you like. But looking back on it now, the church that sent my parents out to Brazil, their home church, fantastic church, huge congregation on Sunday morning, had missionaries going out all over the world doing great stuff, and yet the estate in which the church building sat wasn't touched by them. The only time that they had any contact with those people was when there was a complaint about parking on a Sunday morning. And I think it's really exciting that it's changing. If you think about Simon Halls, he's only gone to Pinehurst, but he's as called as my parents were. He's as much a missionary as they were. And all the stuff that's coming out of the Fresh Expressions report, do look it up on the web. It's really exciting how people are finding out what God is doing, and they are actually then joining in and seeing things happen. And listening to the communities about ways of reaching them and touching them. I mean, Cabaret is another cabaret and cafe. When we were thinking about Cabaret and wondering about it, we had Woodlands going on, we had the bus going on. We were doing a huge amount of things for those who were struggling with life and were isolated. And we wondered about, what about people like us? And the whole premise of it is, how often have you wished there was something you could invite your friends to, where they could hear stories of faith without all the unfamiliar things that we in our churches find so important and they find so strange? And so we started with that, and 9 years later we're still going with that. And at times people have said, wow, you've got all these non-Christians here, you've really got to tell them, you've got to have an altar call, you've got to tell them. And he said, no, that's not what it's about. It's about stories of faith. It's about working with God in the mission and letting him do the drawing them to him. And so we've got Open Blue, we've got Cabaret, we've got Cafe. Sunday mornings, because of where we see it, is about equipping us so that we're able to be out there and doing stuff on our front lines and things. And it's all... to me, that's what it's all about. It's about, where's it gone? Finding out what God is doing and joining in. And there'll be different ways, and we do need people supporting. I mean, it's brilliant. Cafe, though, a couple of Chiquita came up to me today, said, I'm going to have my usual table at Cafe. She said, Richard is flying in from the States at 2 p.m., and I'm going to be out at 8 o'clock at the Angel. And apparently they've talked about it and everything's fine about that. I have to say, wow, that's great, that's brilliant. And that's what it's about. I asked Paul whether he would be happy to do the PA on Saturday night. He said, you'll need to talk to my wife. And when I talked to Rosie, I found out that it's her birthday. But she said, no problem. Yeah, I want to be at Cafe too. So we're it's just great to see the way people are getting behind it and they're pushing themselves out to it. And it is, you know, as Andy said before with the bus, as well as there are people on the front line in the communities doing stuff, there's a whole army of people that keep the bus on the road, that are willing to drive it, that are doing the CRB checks, are in the office like Tina, and all of that. And all of that is just as important and as keen to the mission as actually being on the front line. So... right, I think that's probably all I want to say. Are there any questions, or shall I tell these guys my story about two anaconda?
Before you do that, Dave, I think we should pray.
Yep.
I'm just sort of aware that last week, you had, I wasn't in, so I was in two boys, but I've heard some stories from last week about Alan with and Lizzie with their words of knowledge and then people being healed and God moving. And those are miracles. But you know, one of the things that I'm getting more and more is feeling that the real miracle is when somebody changes their mind about something and determines to change their life in a different direction. And I think that Jesus is a master at that because he is our creator. And he changed my heart, and I know he's changed yours at some point. And he is continuing to change mine because that's who he is and that's what he wants to do. He's perfecting his work in me. And I'd just like to pray this morning for us as Dayspring, for all individuals really, that we actually find Jesus changing our minds, changing our hearts, so that we can engage better with the mission. And then if you want to have particular prayer about that, then I think it would only be right to offer it like Alan and Lizzie did, in the sense that we're charismatics, so we love that sort of stuff, and it will be good. And God really meets with us. So if you really want to meet with it in that way. So let's just pray, and then Dave and I will pray for people afterwards if that's the case for anything. Father, we want to thank you that you are a sending God. We want to thank you that you have so much life and energy and a will to continually go out. And your love is this huge motivating factor that we haven't really talked about this morning, but we know that it's because you love us and you love all those other people that we don't know so much that you are sending them. Lord, I am so aware that we feel that we're not really doing a very good job at times, but we're doing our best as best as we can. But I pray, Lord, that you help us to do better. And in that, I just mean find out what you're doing and join in, and that you'd help us to do that. Be humble, work in us, Lord Jesus, change us to enable us to, when we get to the end of our lives, we can say, well, I've done everything I possibly can. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person now. Amen.